Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of CookieCast. On today's episode, I sat down with my friend Pete. Pete's been mentioned a few times on the podcast, and it was great to be able to get him finally on the podcast to talk about some of the stuff which was podcast related and how the podcast sort of got started. I refer to him as my Scott Mosier, which for any Kevin Smith fans out there, you'll understand that. Anybody that doesn't follow Kevin Smith, Scott Mosier was the guy that sort of supported Kevin Smith and was the producer of Kevin Smith's first and subsequent films. He was kind of the person that spurred me on at various points, gave me help with technical things, advice with what stuff to buy to help get the podcast started. Told me all the different things that I use for recording the audio. He advised me where to get the theme tune from, what ways to edit, things like that. So he's been a big help to the podcast. Speaking of theme tune, one of our listeners has actually pointed out that where I've been saying that the podcast has a theme tune, there is episodes that the theme tune isn't there. If I'm honest, I'm not sure how or why that's happened, but I'm going to try and address it, and I will try and make sure that this episode and subsequent episodes have that theme tune on, and then, hopefully that won't happen in the future. This episode features me and Pete talking about podcasts and books and all sorts of things, just a great chat. There's a natural break. We had a quick break at one point, and then we got back to it. And again, as is often the case, we've got another two-part episode. So this is part one of my conversation with Pete. And then we will come back for part two. I feel this podcast is a little unfinished, because although it is a natural two-part podcast, it didn't even scratch the surface of the stuff that I wanted to talk to Pete about. And it's one of those that I'm really hoping to get Pete back at some point to be able to get further into the conversation that we've sort of always intended on doing in this time of trying to put this podcast together. So I hope you enjoy part one. Hope you tune in for part two. Hope you like hearing where sort of the origin of the podcast came from. And yeah, hopefully we'll be able to get Pete back to do another couple of episodes at some point. So here it is. This is my chat with Pete, and this is part one of the CookieCast episode with Pete Turnbull. Podcast time. Let's do this.
Okay.
I think that might be my catchphrase.
I
start with podcast time. Let's do this.
Right.
That might be. I might make it my catchphrase for podcasts.
Yeah. I can see the t-shirt.
Oh, merchandise. That's where the money is.
Yeah.
That's the money. Got to get some merchandise going. So, Pete.
Hello.
Finally here for the podcast. In a moment, I'm going to talk about how you're essentially my Scott Mosier.
Praise indeed. Wow. Okay.
But we'll come back to that. So, I've been doing this thing. I don't know if you've listened to any of them. It's real mean stuff right at the beginning to annoy people straight off the bat.
Okay.
So, I show people a list of questions that I'm going to rely on to get me through the podcast, to sort of relax people into, so they know what's coming.
Right.
And then I start with a question that's not on the list.
Nice.
So, your question is, what's your favourite dinosaur?
Stegosaurus.
Oh, I knew you were going to say Stegosaurus. In my head, I was like, Stegosaurus. It's going to be Stegosaurus.
It's got the big plates down the thing. Is it spiky tail Stegosaurus? I think it's spiky
tail. With the ones that go off and then the spiky tail.
Or with Stegosaurus.
I used to like Triceratops.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Well, I come from an age where it was Diplodocus.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. I remember the days when there was like four dinosaurs, yeah. T-Rex, Triceratops, Stegosaurus, and then the Diplodocus, yeah. And that was all that existed in the dinosaur world. Now you've got that one with the neck, that one,
yeah.
Velociraptor, yeah. You know.
We'd never heard of Velociraptors. They didn't exist.
No, they didn't. Like back when Pluto was a planet.
Well, exactly.
Oh, those were the days. Oh. So, I can skip the bit where I explain to you what a podcast is.
I've actually learned more. You've been actually knocking this stuff out. I've been talking about doing this for years.
I have been knocking this stuff out.
How do you know?
This will be number 11.
11.
In a couple of weeks. Right. At this point in time, I could put my feet up now and not have to do another podcast for nearly 2 months.
Nice.
In theory.
Yeah.
And some of those I'm going to break into two parts. Yeah. So I could go on holiday for a month and come back and still have content. But this was the one. This was the original one. Hey, Pete, let's do a podcast. So I don't need to tell you what a podcast is.
I'm aware of the podcast.
You just revealed to me that not as much of an avid listener at the moment. What was the last podcast you listened to?
The last podcast I listened to. Well, it depends if you count it as a podcast anymore. It was an episode of Fat Man on Batman. It was. The lines are all blurring now. Things that were podcasts in the traditional sense, like we are doing now, have become YouTube TV shows. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So technically, it'll be Fat Man on Batman. It's the one thing that I religiously watch. I'm way behind on things like Hollywood Babylon because they took it off YouTube, and that was my preferred way of listening to it, watching it. So I've got loads of those to catch up on, which is quite nice because I like the feeling of them being in the bank.
Mm.
And who knows? I mean, Alf could even have like a 10th impression by now for all I know, so that's quite cool. But probably Fat Man on Batman, talking about it was after Black Panther, so it was Mark Bernardin did a sort of Black Panther special because Kevin was off doing Kev stuff. And it was when Kevin came back, it was that Fat Man on Batman.
Right.
They're doing it from Skim and Villainy, which is a great setting for their show, so long may it continue.
I'm going to. I don't know whether upset is the right word, and I apologise to Kevin Smith now, because I'm aware of the principle that the number one subscriber to this podcast is almost definitely going to be Kevin Smith. I talked to him through the airwaves.
I can imagine.
And I'm going to upset at least Kevin Smith, if not yourself and Kevin Smith. I do not do Fat Man on Batman.
Then you need to sort that out, and it needs to be in your life.
You need to get your shit together, put it in a shit sack.
The thing I like about all podcasts, which sadly I cannot offer you today, is... Kevin Smith has the passion to talk about stuff. Mark Bernardin has the actual information about how shit works and what happens. and that's why they balance so well. Because Kev's got the passion. Kev is just like, he's my mate or something.
But
in some way, we'll probably end up talking about Kevin Smith. But
doubtful.
In my mind, in some way, there's a little, my own version of Kevin Smith, my friend, is in my head somewhere, you know. But the way they work so well is that. Mark Bernardin was like entertainment editor for the LA Times or something. He knows a lot of stuff about the industry and how stuff works. And he's a writer, and he's a comic book writer, and he's just finished doing stuff for Castle Rock and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So all sorts of stuff going on. Kevin Smith has always like, you know, worn his heart on his sleeve and talked about the business.
Yeah.
Mark Bernardin, for me, is the perfect balance of that because he comes from it from a slightly different place. And he's maybe... if there's one failing I have in Kevin Smith, is that he always goes on about how unsuccessful and crap everything he does is, which is annoying to hear because it's the stuff that I know both love. So.
Yeah, that we grew up with. And
yeah.
When I say grow up, I mean we got older watching. You know, yeah. It's not like we were watching as kids so much, but...
Matt Bernardin comes back with this... He realises all the stuff which make Kevin Smith go, oh my God, you're so smart, you should write stuff. And of course, well, he does.
Mm-hmm.
But often Mark Bernardin's picking up on things and nuances of stuff that I wouldn't have picked up on from a certain thing. So Kev's got the passion, Mark Bernardin's got the information and the passion. And I could sit and listen to them yabber on all day. You know?
It's strange because for the number of Kevin Smith podcasts that I listen to and I attribute to the reason that I do this and other things in my life. I tried Fat Man and Batman, and I don't know if I hit a particularly bad episode or an episode that I'd had less interest in. And I tried it again and just went, I already listen to a lot of podcasts. My podcast listening capabilities have been boiled down quite a lot. There are ones that I listen to the odd episode and do not subscribe to versus the ones I have subscribed to. Mm-hmm. And I think I had to make a choice at one point to which ones I was definitely going to listen to and which ones I wasn't. And I think Fat Man and Batman was on my list. And then when I've changed phones and had to subscribe, but say put these podcasts on, I didn't add Fat Man and Batman, and I've had to kind of let that one go. I still religiously listen to Smodcast as the original. Mm-hmm. And Hollywood Babylon is my number one. Like you say, it's always great to have a Hollywood Babylon in the bank, and I will leave it a month so I know I've got a good run because I'll just blast through them in a couple of days. So, that actually brings me nicely to, if you had to rate podcasts going from 3 to 1, what would be your number 3?
That's really difficult because with any top 5, and I'm sure we'll touch on this again, but with any top 5, ask me in 3 hours' time and my top 5 will be different.
Yeah.
Because top 5s are... amorphous things. Mm-hmm. It depends on mood and it depends on everything else. I can give you top 3. I can't give them in order, and tomorrow my top 3 would be different. Obviously Hollywood Babylon's up there because it's fun and it's mm-hmm. entertaining, and there was a possibly being a sort of Kevin Smith fan and things, but also if dick and knob jokes don't make me laugh, then bury me, I'm dead. I mean, there's a certain 6-year-old Pete that is still in my head and still expecting the fact that knob jokes are funny. I genuinely like podcasts where I think the people involved in them are genuinely nice. Ralph Garman seems like a really nice guy. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He celebrates his geekdom like Kevin Smith does. Mm-hmm. That's why they work so well. All the stuff with, whenever he talks about Adam West, I choke up, you know, because there's a man who was clearly, you know, he loved this guy for his art.
He did love that guy.
And loving someone for their art is a really important thing. So, obviously, Hollywood Babylon's up there. Fat Man and Batman will be up there. And sadly, one that is no longer with us because, and this again is the lines blurring between different sort of genres of media, it would be the podcast that resulted from the Adam and Joe show on BBC Six Music, which was, they took their radio show that they did, I think on Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon, mm-hmm. and they cut all the music out and that was their podcast.
Okay.
It was wonderful because it was like all podcasts, and the reason why, as I said at the start, I can't bring this to you, it was two knowledgeable, clever people talking about stuff they loved. And Joe Cornish obviously wrote Ant-Man and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so there was the Attack the Block, which is a pretty amazing film.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of stuff. And then Adam Buxton, who is into entertainment and music and comedy and all these other things. Adam Buxton's NWA car sketch, which will be on YouTube, is incredible. And it's so well done.
It's brilliant. And I read an interview where they said that must have taken you days to achieve. And his answer was, I think we did it in 3 takes.
Yes.
And he nearly got it on the 2nd take.
Yeah.
And that is just like, wow.
Yeah. And it's that thing that they do so well, and Adam and Joe have always done, way back from when they did the Channel 4 show, was that they are white middle-class people who are into hip-hop. And as a white middle-class guy from the north of England who's into hip-hop, they summed up so well so many things which were part of my life at the time. And that's, I think, what makes a good podcast. But I really miss their BBC Six show. BBC Six Music has revolutionised radio for me because radio in this country was shit, and then BBC Six Music came on and it knocked it out of the pad because it was people who actually gave a toss about music. Running a music show. I mean, who knew that was like?
Which is an interesting concept in this day and age.
Yeah, Phil Jupitus, you know, playing The Clash. who knew the Clash and, and that sort of thing. They've got Kerris Matthews, who does a Sunday morning show, which is sometimes a bit hit and miss and sometimes really, really good. I grew up loving Mark and Lard on BBC Radio 1, and still mourn them to some degree. Mark Radcliffe and Stuart McConey now do a show on the afternoons on BBC Six Music, and it's not Mark and Lard, but it's there are echoes of it, and it's really good. So yeah, anything like that. But the Adam and Joe podcast, which I probably have a few stashed away somewhere, I'll dig them out for you. Just genuinely entertaining. And then talking about stuff that they're doing, they do lots of awful impersonations of like David Bowie and things, and they're huge Bowie fans. And they did huge bad impressions of Roger Moore, and then they had Roger Moore on, and Joe Cornish, clearly struggling because he's completely starstruck by Roger Moore. Wow. Trying to interview Roger Moore is one of the sweetest pieces of radio you will ever hear. Brilliant. It is absolutely charming. And I think that he was a bit embarrassed about it when he heard it back. It's like, oh my God, I was awful. I was just like this simpering fanboy. I think we're all simpering fanboys. Yeah. I think for him to do that on live radio with Sir Roger Moore, and he really just showed through. It's this full circle. It's back to Ralph Garman talking about Adam West.
Yeah.
It's somebody who just loved this guy and loved what this guy was, and that he was clearly Roger Moore was Joe Cornish's Bond, and that sort of thing. And it's this really sweet piece of radio. So yeah, that would be my top three. Bit of an extended answer, but there you go.
It's interesting because both we were talking about a book which I'm going to talk about later. The Distraction Pieces book. Both Adam and Joe are in the book. The snippets of their podcasts are in that book.
Interesting.
So that might be something worth having a look through.
Right.
So something I wanted to address with you quite early on, especially talking about podcasts, is that this is the podcast. You are on the podcast. This has been a long time coming.
It has.
Something I mentioned at the beginning was that you are like my Scott Mosier. So I attribute three things to the reason that we're sitting here now doing this and the reason that there is a podcast. I've made no attempt to hide that Kevin Smith is one huge influence on that because, you know, as I think I've said to you multiple times, I think it's even on the website. Kevin Smith told me I could do a podcast, and unfortunately for everyone else, I believed him.
Yeah, it's one of his strengths.
And it's a growing market and that sort of thing, but I believed him to the point that he told me so many times that I went, right, fine, I'll do it. The second person is Leanne, because Leanne will never tell me that I can't. She'll never discourage me from doing something that she knows that I want to do, that I'm passionate about. I think I said to you earlier, as long as I'm not telling her that I want to eat babies and that sort of stuff, then she's like, yeah, okay, you know, that sort of thing. And that, although it doesn't initially sound like it, can be an encouragement.
Yeah, of course it is.
Somebody that's like, yeah, you know, if that's what makes you happy sort of thing, you know, so that's the second person, and I could talk about that all day. And the third person, unfortunately for you, is you, in the sense that I was thinking about this for the last few days, and I was like, how will I introduce this part of the podcast? And I was like, Pete's like my Scott Mosier. You are the guy that came along that went, yeah, you keep saying you're going to do it, so when are you going to do it? Because you've said to me, I want to do a podcast. But you're still saying it and you're not doing it.
So that is my cookie voice. Yeah.
So grab a microphone, plug it into the laptop and press record. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. I'm definitely going to do it. Yeah, you say you're going to do it. And I was like, not so much, well, fuck you. It was more of a, yeah, all right, I'll do it. And you helped me massively through this is how you press record. This is how you then clean up what you've recorded. This is a microphone that you can buy for this much money and it will do the job. This is how you get it out into the world. This is the internet, and it's a place where things live, and you can put something there, and hey, this is how you buy a website. And you did all those jobs, not jobs in such, but you were like, hey, you can buy a website. Me and you were talking online one night, and you're like, you know, you can just buy a website. And I'm like, no. Right, I found you one. Okay, it's this much money. All right, so there. Okay, I've bought it. Now what do I do? Well, now you need to put a website on it. How do I do that? You build a website. It's been that, and I sort of say in my head, Pete's like my sort of Scott Merger.
I appreciate you blowing smoke up my ass, and please continue. But but it's right. There's a few things about that. I mean, if you have friends who are not encouraging you to pursue the things you really want to do, then they're not your friends, and tell them to fuck off. Secondly, I am doing is paying this forward, right? When I did a career change thing, what, 20 years ago now, something like that, and I had a friend who I've lost touch with since, sadly, but who fundamentally taught me computers and stuff. And
I remember.
He was very, very patient about it, and he was patient with me, and I used to ring him all the time and say, how do you do this thing again? I've forgotten. Or how do I do this thing? I've heard this word. I literally don't know what it means. Mm-hmm. And he never did to me what I would never do to you, which is say, well, you know, just fucking Google it, you know? Because yes, you can fucking Google it, and you should, mm-hmm. and everybody should, because mm-hmm. you know, the internet's a wonderful thing. But it also helps to have someone just push you in the right direction if they know stuff. So all I'm really doing is paying it forward to someone else. And hopefully in X number of years' time, when you're a podcasting superstar and someone comes to you and goes, how do I start a podcast? You will go, well, you know what, sit down there and I'll tell you. Mm. And then you pay it forward as well. That's how it works. So you're very kind, and it's my pleasure. And, you know, but nothing should take away from the fact that you did this, that you pressed record and you bought the equipment and you put something out in the world. I am a professional critic. I will sit there and go, you know what, I didn't like Defenders on Netflix. I thought it was shit. Yeah, it's so much worse than the complex superhero drama I wrote for Netflix. It's I'm like everybody. I'm a professional critic on the internet. I'm not even a professional. I don't get paid for it. But I'm very happy to criticize someone else's art without putting any art out of my mm-hmm. myself. And one of the reasons for that is, in my mind, I'm probably too old to be doing things like this. I've got a job. I've got a wife. I've got all these other things. But I'm sort of focusing on other stuff, but I don't have a focus on creating content. I don't have a focus on putting my art out into the world. Yeah. You did, and you just needed someone to give you a little bit of a shove, or preferably a few people, to have the sort of bravery to do it. And it is brave, you know. Putting your voice on the internet for everybody to criticise and call stupid and all the mm-hmm. other things that happens in comment sections is a brave, important step. And you took that step. And no one else took it for you. Yeah, okay, some of us cheered you on.
Yeah.
But you did this. So don't let anyone say anything different. But if I am your Scott Mosier, which I think is overplaying it, then I'm very happy to be there. So, you know. Cool. It's really good not only to be here, but also to hear you doing this stuff. You know?
It's one of those things, and this is something that I've discussed with Leanne, and This is sort of my latest pledge, I suppose, and it's actually a pledge to you that from about a week ago, and certainly now and going forward, I am in fact going to Google things rather than I don't know what I'm doing on the internet. I am actually going to Google stuff so that you spend less time going, oh, for fuck's sake, it's simple, you idiot, and less time.
I haven't done that yet. I have done that a few times, but it's that thing of everyone needs to be allowed to gain confidence in new things. Yeah. No one goes into something new knowing what the hell they're doing. I remember I retook up about 20 years ago. I used to do a lot of archery, and because I watched Robin Hood films when I was a kid and wanted to learn how to shoot a bow and arrow.
Hell yeah.
And it's very dispiriting when you turn up for something like that, when you realise that you think, oh, this is going to be awesome, and then you realise that actually there's quite a lot to learn, and you're really, really shit at the start, and that sort of thing. And if you're learning a sport, or a language, or learning to drive, or riding a bike, or something else, it's sort of expected you'll be really, really shit at the start.
Yep.
and you'll gradually get better over time, mm-hmm. and no one will criticise you for being shit at the start.
Okay.
Podcast is the opposite. Mm-hmm. Everyone will criticise you for being shit at the start because it's the internet and everyone's got an opinion.
So here's the way I'm looking at this is what I think is if at some point I go onto YouTube and go, oh, somebody's left me a comment. And I look and that comment is, you could possibly be the worst human being I've ever had the misfortune of stumbling across on the internet. Mm-hmm. My answer will be, cool, somebody listened to my podcast who wasn't a friend of mine.
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is that now you've got that little bit of confidence at the start, where if you were doing anything else for the first time, people would be supporting you because you'd go to a club and learn a new skill or something else. With this sort of thing, you know, I've just given you that push that you're confident enough to start Googling stuff and understanding what you read. Because when you're really, really new to all this, Googling doesn't help you.
So this has been the biggest problem that I have found and suffer through. And it's, okay, I've finally asked Google the right question. Yeah. Google has given me the right answer. This is a sentence that has six words in that I do not understand those six words. How do I then, my question at that point is, do I Google those six words to try and work out what they mean? Yeah. Because I'm like, okay, I feel like I don't need somebody who's going to tell me certain things. I need a translator. I need like Google Translate in human form, somebody that's going to go, so that word means this, and gives the long explanation and stuff. And unfortunately for you, rely on you, and I rely on my mate Ed, who's done podcasts with me, and we've talked about technology and things like that. Mm-hmm. Because you've both gone out there into the world and gone, you know what, I want to learn this, and I'm not going to stop until I've learned it. And it's that translation of that thing, like I've been trying to learn the coding language and learning that sort of stuff, and that is just, you can Google it and you know you've got the answer, but if you don't understand the words that that answer's using, then you're probably no further forward.
And the internet is unhelpful when it comes to that sort of thing. It's like, what mic do I need to buy to do a podcast? Mm. Is something you should be able to put into Google, and what will come out is some article someone's written saying, well, if you wanted to set up for the first time, this is mm-hmm. what I'm using. But instead, what you get is, first of all, a load of sponsored ads for various microphones, normally mm-hmm. for hundreds and hundreds of pounds. Then you get loads of confusing things about people saying, well, I started off with this thing, and someone else below them saying, yeah, well, that's rubbish, you should have used this, and you have no idea which one of those is the right answer, and possibly neither of them, possibly both. Mm-hmm. You need someone to just sort of, you know, get you into it, and so you're confident enough to experiment for yourself. So at some point, you're going to, you know, buy yourself a mixing desk or set up a studio with boom mics or something else. And you'll probably start off with something fairly cheap and you'll play around with it and you'll have confidence enough to do it on your own volition. But when you're really first starting, when I bought, the archery thing. So I did that about 20 years ago and then I stopped. I moved away from the club I was shooting with, so I just let it all go. A couple of years ago, I started again. And I literally got the bow that I was using out of the loft and it was in fairly good nick still and went and learned to shoot again. And about two sessions in, after I passed the you're not going to kill anyone with this what is essentially a weapon, so you can shoot in our club, and about maybe two or three sessions in, I approached one of the coaches and said, look, I think I'm ready now to be told all the crap I'm doing wrong that I've forgotten from mm-hmm. when I first learned how to do this. They gave me a really, really good session. I was giving a shout out, actually. It was Thirst Bowman, and they were really, really nice with me. And I couldn't stay with them very long because they moved away. But they spent an hour just watching me shoot and give me loads of good advice and said, look, if you want to improve, be thinking about these things, do these things. And at that point, they had given me enough that I could just go on for my own at that point. But they gave me that little bump. And that's what you get in everything except something which is basically internet-based, where you are just setting out into the void for the first time. Mm-hmm. And that those sort of things aren't there. And I don't know if in schools and colleges and things they teach this sort of stuff now. I know they teach how to be safe on the internet and, you know, don't give your credit card to paedophiles type thing, but do they teach, okay, if you want to do media studies, do they do podcasts?
I think media studies now is massively different to what anything we would have come remotely close to. I know when I looked at media, sort of round college and a few years after that, it was very limited. You know, you might make a short film because they'd give you a camera and some sound equipment and there you go. Now it's media as a whole. You'll write a newspaper article that you'll read on the radio, that you'll convert that radio show into a podcast, right, that you'll then put onto a website on the internet, and then you'll publish it to YouTube and turn it into a video on there, and then you'll make that video into part of your movie.
But I hope for creators like yourself, they're also teaching them to understand how to get value out of a comments section.
Yeah.
You know, how to get rid of the people who just say, oh, you're shit, you're the worst thing I've ever heard, and be able to take what is probably extremely abusive and not very constructive criticism and turn it into something which improves your art. Because filtering through the crap that you get by throwing your creativity directly onto the internet like you're doing is a real skill in itself.
Yeah, I mean, this podcast will have a section at the end where I talk about the podcast that we're doing today, and I will then throw out a load of, oh, hit us up on Facebook, hit us up on Twitter, and send us an email. Mm-hmm. But that spiel I give it is, tell us what we're doing well and tell us what we're doing badly. Tell us what you like and tell us what you don't like. Tell us what you want to hear more of, tell us what you want to hear less of. And I, when I say those words, in my head I hear somebody is going to email you and go, oh, I really like your podcast, but can you get rid of that cookie guy?
No, I can't.
And I would be like, yeah, okay, I guess I can get someone else to do it.
You're going to get someone saying, I never want to hear that guy on your podcast again. He's a dick.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get all that stuff. I think the thing that I'm very conscious of with all creative people is that you've got to be doing it because you like the process of creation and throwing stuff out there. If you're doing it to be accepted by the internet, you're going to fail, because the internet is a very unaccepting place. You know, you've got to do this because you like doing it, because you think that other people might be interested in it, and you want to throw something out there that's a piece of you out into the world.
So in true Kevin Smith fashion, I'm going to yet again give the reason that I'm doing my podcast, and that is because I love podcasts, and I spent a lot of time in my working life and outside of my working life in that spending time talking to people that I find really interesting. And I listen to a lot of podcasts, and then I spent my time talking to a lot of people that I found really interesting who were incredibly passionate about what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. And over time of that saturation of podcasts in my head and the conversations I was having, it was like that eureka moment where I went, oh my God, I'm doing what I'm listening to. Mm-hmm. So why don't I try and push that further forward and push it out into the world? The number of times that you and I sat down for an afternoon with a coffee in front of us, talking about a book for an hour, talking about a game for 30 minutes, and you would leave my house and drive away, and as you're driving away, I'm texting you going, why the hell didn't we record the conversation that we've just had? Because that is what I've just listened to yesterday on a podcast. Everything we spoke about, I was listening to. Me and Leanne's mum, and she's already done a podcast. She's the current record holder for the time on the podcast. We sat down multiple times in the last few months with a coffee and talked about very obscure things, a lot of conversations about music. We're both very passionate about music, and she's very into the era of music that I'm becoming more interested in. So we talk about that a lot because she knows a lot about it and I'm just getting into that, like the 70s music.
All right, okay.
And again, that was a conversation where I would walk away from it and go, my God, that would have been a perfect podcast. And, you know, the universe has a way of telling you what you kind of should be doing, and it's up to you whether you listen or you ignore it. And as I keep saying, unfortunately for the internet, I listen. And that's why I'm doing this, you know. Yeah. I was going to say to you that you told me that I needed to turn the podcast essentially into a video, even though it wasn't a video, it was an audio with a picture on a loop sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I spent 2 hours one day doing just that. Mm-hmm. And then I did that yesterday, and it took me less than 5 minutes to set it up to get it so that it would code and export and stuff. And I was saying to Len, I was like, do you remember how long it took me the first time to do that? And she was like, yeah, but I told you it was the first time you were doing it and you were just learning, and the next time you do it, you wouldn't take so long. And it's a little bit of work, but I've got that time. And
do you realise that the content is like that as well? So at the moment, it is perfectly reasonable, and this one is going to be no exception, that you what we talk about is going to be a bit unstructured, it's going to be a bit rambling, and your skills of interviewing someone, which is essentially what you're doing, have yet to be honed and all that stuff. And just like you can now do that in 5 minutes and it took you 2 hours, you know, you're going to listen back on these things, if you stick with this, in a year, 2 years, 5 years time, and go, wow, they were really raw and really rough and a bit, God, what was I thinking? And that's how you start with everything. So it's really important to start.
I've done it with podcasts. I've got into podcasts at episode 300 and gone, well, I wonder what they sounded like at episode one. So you go back to episode one and you go, wow, that's different.
I picked up Hollywood Babylon on about episode 70-odd, maybe even later than that. And then whilst I was listening to them, I suddenly thought, hang on, there's 70 of these I've never listened to. So I went all the way back to the start. And not that they'll ever hear this, I imagine, but they won't like the comparison. It was like watching Gotham. It was the Gotham is based entirely on the fact that it's the first time you see X. So you see, you know, Mr. Freeze before he's Mr. Freeze or whatever. You see the guy, is this guy the Joker or not type thing. It was like the origin story, listening to Hollywood Babylon 1 to 70. The first time Ralph Garman does an Al Pacino impression. The first time the theme tune for something comes in, and there's like three of them, but of course you know what the theme tune's going to be picked.
Yeah.
So, you know, the old Hollywood Helpers theme tune, which was rubbish but great at the same time, and all that sort of stuff. So it was like that. And yeah, the first Hollywood Babylons, and bear in mind, I mean, Kevin Smith talks for a living and has talked for a living for a very long time, and they're rough and they're structured at that point, and they're still working out what sort of thing they are. It's really interesting to listen to that.
Yeah, it's series one syndrome, isn't it?
Yeah.
Never judge a series by series one, because series one's finding its feet. I remember the story about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, that by the end of series one, they were going to cancel it.
Yeah.
And they said, I think it was Fox, were like, right, we've got some pointers. Here's your choices. You can either listen to what our suggestions are and get a second series, or we're going to cancel you now. So they went, what are your suggestions? And it was, we want to bring in a new character, we want to change this, change that, change the other. We want to move from, because the bar in Always Sunny was an actual bar in the first series, and then they built it on a soundstage for series two. They brought in Danny DeVito, which just a stroke of genius. And series two, that show really took off, and I think they're on series 10 now, going into series 11 or something. Just goes to show, don't judge something by series one. I do wonder what it'll be like to come back and listen to these after episode 500 and go, wow, that's what we were doing back then.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is what it is at the moment, and we'll see what comes of it. And at some point, somebody might email me and go, hey, I really like your segment on diets and exercise, but, you know, stop talking about American football. You know nothing.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
Have you thought about recutting as well? Because there's going to be things that you can pick out of this when you want to do a video game special or a film special or whatever. You know, these are going to be long, rambling things at this point. But eventually you can say, oh, actually, yeah, and that, you know, that podcast with Jeff 4 years ago, we talked about Spider-Man or whatever. I'm going to go find that and take the bits out of that. You know,
there's
all sorts of stuff here that is in the bank for later.
Bill Burr does he does two podcasts a week, and half of one of those is a throwback.
Right.
It's a previous podcast from years ago, usually the same day, but like 5 years ago.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, more bang for your buck in a sense. So let's talk some TV.
Okay.
I generally give a long rambling explanation about how TV isn't TV, but I imagine you know that.
I can't remember the last time I watched TV.
Yeah.
TV for me is synonymous with Netflix now. So, yes.
What are you... do you binge stuff? Are you a binger?
Absolutely. I love binging. Binging is... if you told 12-year-old me that instead of having to wait a whole 7 days for the next episode of Airwolf or whatever I was particularly into when I was 12, I could sit down in front of a computer screen and watch at my leisure, whenever I wanted, high definition, my favourite show for the next 6 hours, and I wouldn't have believed you. Binging is wonderful, and I get slightly frustrated when Netflix doesn't allow me to do it.
Yeah, because even Netflix has now started going, we're going to release an episode a
week. Yeah, well, some of that they have to because of how it's being syndicated. So Star Trek Discovery, for instance, they had to do that because in America it was on CBS.
Yeah.
So it was being released weekly, and if they put it all on Netflix, nobody would have watched CBS. So we're lucky enough in this country not to have CBS, which is I'm not taking the piss out of CBS at this point, but that meant that we got it on Netflix.
I'll watch out for the lawsuit coming through on that.
CBS lawyers, it's like Blackbriar, they've got a little bleeping thing now at CBS headquarters. Fox News can fuck off as well, by the way, for the record. But anyway, I do binge watch. As of 1:30 this morning, I finished binge watching Jessica Jones, season 2, which was great. I am, as you already know, not a massive aficionado of superheroes. I didn't have comic books growing up, really. I occasionally bought a copy of Batman or Batman or Spider-Man or something like that, but I didn't really follow them consecutively. I never had like a subscription to a comic or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the superhero stuff is fairly new to me when it gets on TV, particularly now that Marvel is God and they're going down the more sort of obscure characters that I'd never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like Jessica Jones. Jessica Jones is unique for me because she doesn't have a secret identity. She's not really asked about being a hero. Mm-hmm. She just wants to do her job. She's traumatised and fucked up and interesting because of that, because in some ways, a lot of us are traumatised.
And a massive alcoholic. I'm not sure if one of her superpowers is that she doesn't take alcohol like normal people. I don't know if her superpowers change... I don't know if I've ever. So you were talking. We were talking online the other night, and you were saying about that you were watching Jessica Jones, and I didn't offer my opinion because, again, it's one of those. I watched the first episode of Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
That name is really difficult, and wasn't taken with it.
Right.
I left it a long time, and then I watched the second episode. And still wasn't taken with it, and I haven't gone back to it. Right. The other thing that I didn't say was I could be one of two people, because somebody recommended it to me, and I watched it off their recommendation, but I actually did enjoy Iron Fist.
Right.
My brother-in-law recommended Iron Fist to me, and I went, but it's had awful reviews. Everybody said it's rubbish, and he's like, yeah, it's not. It's really good. And I'm a... Depending on the recommendation I get, I'll watch the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
If I am even remotely interested by the end, I'll watch the second episode.
Right.
And I watched all of it. I also enjoyed The Defenders.
I didn't mind Defenders. I thought Defenders was all right. I didn't watch Iron Fist. I couldn't help noticing that in The Defenders, Danny Rand was not maybe as prominent as the other three. I'd seen the reviews for Iron Fist at that point. Jessica Jones, I give a shit about the characters in it, and I think that's all you really need for a superhero thing.
Yeah.
I find them interesting. I forget what his name is, but her sort of sidekick, the guy who works in her agency, he's genuinely interesting because he's like a recovering addict, and he's in many ways the person that she truly saved, and yet she treats him like shit. Interesting. I found the first season quite hard going because the Kilgrave, the bad guy, because of what he can do, it's pretty unpleasant. It's very rapey. I have big problems with rapey. Most people do. It was hard watching. This season is far more about Killy rather than rapey, which is easier for me to handle. That's a whole other podcast in itself. But... I enjoyed it. I was interested that certain people didn't turn up Because I also watched Luke Cage and really liked Luke Cage, mainly because Luke Cage was just cool as hell.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Luke Cage.
From the soundtrack to the style to him as an actor, it was just so slick.
You know? Any show that goes, here's your bad guy, and this is a bad, bad guy, and he's real bad, and now he's dead.
Yeah.
And you know that the series isn't over. He's got a good few episodes left. He's like, yeah, we killed the bad guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I again, Luke Cage, a comic book.
Sorry, spoiler.
Go on. Oh, yeah. yeah. They win. Spoilers. He's a superhero I'd never heard of. I'd heard of Daredevil, but mainly from the Affleck films back in the day, which I'd never seen. I was aware of Elektra for the same reason, and because I used to have a big thing for Jennifer Garner. But yeah, so Jessica Jones I'd never heard of. Luke Cage I'd never heard of. Just interesting stuff, you know. And a bit more human in their superhero-ness.
Yeah.
I've always had a big struggle with Superman. Because he just seems a bit one-dimensional to me.
I mean, he's the strongest thing on the face of the earth, I was going to say his kryptonite is kryptonite, but then I was like, whoa,
it's factually accurate.
The fact that his down, you know, the thing that can hurt him, there's very little evidence other than when he is killed by it that it can kill him, and it's proper, like they have to drive like a stake through his heart made of kryptonite.
Right.
He's essentially allergic to kryptonite.
Yeah.
Other than that, he is the strongest thing in creation, and he has powers that we don't even know about, because each incarnation of Superman reveals some other power that we never knew he had.
Right.
There's like points where he can see in so many. He's like Predator. He's got so many different types of vision, and stuff like that. Yeah, Superman. It's the Injustice principle. Injustice, the games, Injustice 1, Injustice 2, all of the DC characters, it's a fighting game.
Oh, right.
And one of the characters you can choose is Superman.
Oh, so he wins that.
So he wins. But then they went, no, because we made all of the other characters as strong as Superman and made Superman less strong.
So he's not Superman.
So, no. it's just that...
The Superman thing, with all his many powers... I think old Superman, who couldn't fly but he could jump, and was incredibly strong, that sort of worked. But once he's got, you know, laser vision and electricity hands and all this stuff, the more complicated they make him, the more one-dimensional he seems to become. It's a weird dichotomy. But, I don't know. Superman was always really boring to me because he was the least human of all the superheroes. Batman as well. How much can I empathise with a billionaire playboy with daddy issues? You know, I've only got the daddy issues. I don't have the money to do the Bruce Wayne thing. I don't fully understand how Tony Stark and Bruce Wayne are different. I know they're DC and Marvel, but they're basically the same. They're inventee people who have infinite cash. That's their, that's their superpower. They're less interesting. An alcoholic detective who happens to be really strong and possibly has other powers she doesn't really understand is just somehow more interesting to me. I don't know why.
Because it's more realistic.
I think there's certainly more empathy.
I think that's what's come out from what you've been saying there. You know, Luke Cage is set in a more realistic world. Yeah. Jessica Jones is a more realistic character. Mm. Although you've got your Daredevil and your Iron Fist, if you want to go that far, you know. They're more realistic while still being superheroes. Daredevil is blind, but he can see. That's his superpower in that sense of, you know, he trained to be good at martial arts, but other than that, he's you know, quote-unquote blind, but he can see.
And I'm assuming he can see better than a seeing person, otherwise that's not a superpower.
Yeah, so he's basically a bat. He uses some kind
of... all his other senses are super...
And he can tell if you're lying because he can hear whether your heart's beating faster or not. That sort of like various parts of his powers. But at the end of the day, he can see and can fight well. Another series that I struggled with was Daredevil.
I've had friends recommend it to me. I watched the first one. I get the sort of the premise of it. I found it uninteresting. I think the drama is more important to me than the superhero, the superpower. I have to give a shit about the people around the story.
Mm.
You know, the people surrounding Jessica Jones are fundamentally interesting. Trish or Patsy, depending on which name she's using, is the sister who's jealous of the superhero.
Mm.
Because she is a she's a media person. She has a radio show. She was like a child TV star.
Mm-hmm.
And she's used to being the centre of attention. And her big struggle is the fact that Jessica Jones, being a superhero, is now centre of attention.
Right.
And she is a fading starlet who has sort of a talk radio show in the afternoons that deals with, you know, what hat I should wear for this season and whether pop socks are in or out. And so... I think she eventually, as well, from what I understand, it sort of becomes a superhero.
Right.
She becomes like Wildcat or something.
Right.
But at which point she'll probably become less interesting to me. But as the human being coping with the fact that someone else is a superhero, that's an interesting thing.
It's the standing next to greatness thing.
Yeah, and it's the whose story am I more interested in? The guy who can fly and has supervision and laser eyes, or the people surrounding that? The people running away from the building in Batman versus Superman. I'm more interested in them than I am in Batman or Superman.
Mm.
You know? Because Batman, I like everybody from... Because, whether it's Adam West or Michael Keaton, were my childhood Batman.
Yep.
By Val Kilmer, I'm sort of done with it. But you know, I sort of understand Batman. I know everything I need to know about Batman. What I don't know is, how does Alfred feel about all this? I'm far more interested in Alfred. You know, it's one of the things that, I mean, Gotham gets panned. The one thing I really like about Gotham is what they did with Alfred, who's this ex-SAS fucking guy. Alfred is badass in Gotham.
Nice.
You know? He's ex-Special Forces. He teaches little Bruce to fight nice. And look after himself. And he's the father figure to him. And he mm-hmm. brings him up and he gives him his moral compass. Obviously not overly successfully because he grows up to be Batman. But mm-hmm. even so, you know, he gives him some moral compass. He stops him being evil because yep. he's such a strong paternal figure. I'm much more interested in Alfred than I am in Batman. I'm much more interested in the people around Jessica Jones than Jessica Jones herself. Even though Kirsten Ritter is brilliant.
Mm.
You know, she's really, really good. I only really know her from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I was going to say Breaking Bad, she was great in that.
Yeah, and it's arguably a somewhat similar character in some ways. They certainly look the same, but they are such a cheap guy. But they're the same sort of damaged, addicted, you know, fuck ups, and that they're interesting. You know, I don't really care about the superheroes so much, and I wonder whether that's because I didn't grow up reading comics and getting invested.
I'm a little bit opposite in a lot of those things. I grew up with comics.
Yeah.
As you know, mm-hmm. My father gave me 6 issues of 2000 AD.
Right.
So at a very young age, I'm reading Judge Dredd. It was like, I'm not sure what I'm reading. It's brutal. Yeah. It was...
It's not a child's comic, is it?
No, it is not. Mm. I'm not sure. I imagined that my mother would have had something to say about it if she really realised what was going on. And there was this whole thing about this poster and some stickers. And that was my introduction. And it was not forced upon me. It was a, you will get comics. So here's a comic and then... I don't remember the first Batman I read. I don't remember whether I was given a Spider-Man or something like that. But for me, I was big into Batman. Batman was the superhero for me because he wasn't a superhero in a world that had Superman, Green Lanterns, and people with superpowers. His superpower was that he, other than the money, was that he was intelligent.
Hmm.
He was smart. He you know, world's greatest detective. And I know you and I have been in a conversation recently about the lack of him being a detective. But there are points in time where it talks about him being the world's greatest detective. There's a couple of stories that really stand out about him being more the detective than the superhero, or even Batman. But I did grow up with superheroes. I had a lot of comics, the graphic novels, the cartoons and stuff like that. So yeah, you know, Batman was my superhero. So yeah, you know,
I always enjoyed hearing about superheroes from other people. That was the weird thing. I shared a house with a chap called Davey. He was a big comic book fan, and had his bedroom a bit like John Cusack in High Fidelity, but the comic book version. Everything was on chronological order in shelves. He had his comics in autobiographical order of when he got them, or got introduced to them, or times in his life he was reading these comics. And they were all in like plastic envelopes and stuff. And these were things you didn't touch.
Bagged and boarded.
Absolutely. And he used to tell me sort of the story arcs. So I remember him telling me about... we used to work at the same bar, and it was dead. It was I can't remember what it was called. It was a pub in the middle of nowhere in this little village, which we had to walk four and a half miles to get to, and it was always fun in the winter. But we get there, there'd be no one there, and so he'd say, "Right, okay, right, I'm going to explain to you how Spider-Man, Venom, and Carnage."
Nice.
For the next 4 hours, nice. I'm going to give you the basic story arc of how we get from Peter Parker to Carnage.
Nice.
And he would explain this stuff. And it was generally interesting because it's that storytelling. You know I'm obsessed with storytelling. So it was the storytelling without the graphics.
How wrong is it that I'm a little bit envious right now? Because that just sounds awesome to me.
It
because
was.
I know the story. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, that would have been awesome.
Yeah. And he says the thing, and then there's this symbiote. A symbiote, right? So it's not really a suit, but he thinks it's a suit. So he puts, and then it rejects him, goes to this other guy, and then he gets corrupted.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that sounds really good. But the prospect of me going, okay, well, can I read these things? Yes, here's 25 years of Spider-Man. Yeah. Start with this one. It's too much.
Yeah. Right? I read a graphic novel recently about how the symbiote was from a world that they all lived on this world, and that's how it came to this planet. But they basically sent him to a psychologist who cured him of being evil,
right?
And then turned him into, because there's Agent Venom,
right?
And Venom, so far down the line, became a proper good guy. Then, in one of the most recent versions, like the current Venom story, the symbiote was attached to a criminal, and he hated it.
Right.
He properly hated it, because this guy was a bad guy, a bad dude sort of thing. And by this point, the symbiote was a good guy.
Right.
And hated every aspect of being attached to this guy who wasn't a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
But then I read this stuff that said that the current incarnation wasn't going over very well, so then they just brought Eddie Brock back into the story. They're like, hey, here's Eddie Brock, and the symbiote's jumped to him because he's slightly better than this bad guy.
Right.
But yeah, that sounds awesome.
And so Davey would very patiently tell me these stories, sometimes more than once as well, because once I'd heard these things, tell me that thing about how Carnage basically killed the entire world. And he'd do other things. He did try and explain Infinity War to me, not overly successfully, it has to be said. But I'm not invested. I think the point I'm trying to make is that a lot of, if you can get rid of the Disneyfication maybe of comic books, there's some amazing storytelling behind these things.
Yeah.
But to me, they're gated. I can't get into them because I've got to go back and read 30 years of Spider-Man or something like that to appreciate the nuances that they're getting into stories now. It's like a daytime soap opera where, you know, I'm going in at year 32.
Batman the Court of Owls has been one of the most recent series that's really stood out for me. And I think it's like 30 issues.
Right.
Which, if you think about how big a comic is,
yeah.
I think that they put them into a series of graphic novels, and I think there was only so many. And it was this story, and Batman doesn't do too well in that story because the Court of Owls, it's like they're a bit like the Illuminati. They've been throughout all of history, and they're just they're just pulling the strings behind the curtain kind of deal. But that was a really interesting Batman story. But yeah, I get the, hey, to learn about this one character, you've got to go back 10 years and start at the beginning.
Yeah, and where people talk about, well, we'll talk about Red Rain in a second, but when people talk about The Flash, which I've never watched, never read, I haven't seen Justice League, and there's like multiple flashes, and it's not, and there's something about, there's various different timelines and parallel universes and all sort of thing. Not invested in that sort of thing. So when I was, Davey would tell me these things, and I said, look, I appreciate I'm not allowed to touch your comics, because, you know, you've made that clear. And I can't go out and even go to a library or to somewhere else and find Batman, because issue one of Batman is worth like 40,000 quid. So, and they've never reissued these things for whatever bloody reason. So, okay, how do I get a self-contained thing? And he went, something, he was flicking through his things, okay, you're allowed to touch this one, and he gave me Red Rain.
Right.
Which is a completely self-contained thing.
It is.
And I read it, and I enjoyed it, and I think it's the only comic I've read. And that's about to change. I'm about to double the number of comics I've sat down and read as a grown up.
Nice.
But yeah, so Red Rain will be one of them, and the other one will be the one that you bought me for my birthday. So they'll both be Batman comics, rather weirdly, for someone who's just said I'm not invested in DC.
I really don't do the Batman.
Yeah, I don't really do DC. I'm not really into it. I followed a lot of the Marvel stuff because it's all been on you know, the Marvel resurgence of TV and cinema. Yeah. Of course, we've all been swept along with that to some degree. But yeah, it'd be slightly ironic that actually it'll be two DC comics, which will be the comics I've actually read.
I mean, to fall in with your irony there, if somebody said, gun to your head, DC Marvel, I'd go, oh, I'm definitely a DC guy. I was showing you my Marvel tattoos earlier.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of, yeah, I'm definitely a DC guy, but I do like these Marvel characters.
So I will come back and tell you what I thought. I don't know, do you want to say what you got me, or should we leave it for now? I don't know.
Go for it.
Is it Batman Returns?
Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns. So I always get it mixed up between Superman Returns and Dark Knight Returns, which again is interesting. I've heard Kevin Smith and Mark Bernardin talk about it. I've heard about various other people talk about it. I've heard about you talk about it. It sounds interesting to me because it's a humanized Batman again.
Yeah.
It's about a guy who's, you know, he comes out of retirement. He's a late middle aged or old man. He's, you know, his bones aren't working. He's not as strong as he used to be. And it's the human story again. Mm. I don't want to do this thing, but I sort of have to.
And let's not forget, it's the book that made Batfleck.
Yeah.
You know, we wouldn't have a Batfleck without that book. So the story goes as this. You mentioned that we talk online a lot, me, you, and Ryan and stuff. We talk online a lot. And me and Ryan got into the, hey, you should read this, you should read that. It was all comics and stuff, and trying to do the job of the guy that you were just talking about, sort of saying, you don't know this superhero, but they're cool because of this story arc and that. And we had a long conversation about that. And you mentioned that book. And I was like, oh, I could probably dig you out a copy of it, whilst at the same time going, you know, once I get up into the loft without any ladders, find the massive box that's up there, to open it, to go all the way through it, to go, well, it's not in here, and then to go, where the hell's that? And then I'd have to go down there, there's some down there, and there's some downstairs, and try and dig it out. So I then looked online to see about getting you a copy of it. Unfortunately, at that point, it was a, hey, you can buy this copy from original printing from 30 years ago, and you can pay a lot of money for it. And I was like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
The one I found wasn't, it said that it wasn't in the best of conditions. And I was a bit like, I ummed and ahed. When I was in Edinburgh, I went into Forbidden Planet, and they had the 20th anniversary edition of that book.
Right.
And I went, oh, that's the book I was going to get for Pete. Flipped it over and went, you fucking what? Because, you know how books print the price on the back of the book? Yeah, when then the shop that you're trying to buy it from has put a sticker next to that, and they wanted exactly twice as much. And I'm like,
wow.
maybe covered the original price up. So I was like, and then I found that they'd released the 30th anniversary edition, and because it was a new edition, it had new edition prices. So when I'm going to get this. So you got a little chunk of the bonus I got paid.
I appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to it as well. As a medium that I don't normally go into, because I've seen lots of film adaptations of comic book heroes. Yeah. This is me, seeing what to me is like the source material.
Yeah.
And that is interesting in itself. You know, it's like going to a museum and seeing like the handwritten manuscript for something. I've seen the Tony Starks and the Batmans and the Supermans on movies, where someone's splashed 300 million on them. Where's the original pen and ink?
The one thing that we always have to remember is that somebody paid 300 million for a version of that story, and that 300 million version has to be worth 300 million. So it's often not quite the right story. Mm-hmm. It's usually an amalgamation of various different ones that they would think are going to work well on the screen.
Could we pause for a minute?
We can pause for a minute, magically. If I can find my cursor, one pause. So there you go, what do you think of that? Part one of my conversation with Pete, done and in the bag. Any good? You like where that's going? Tune in to our next episode, or our next part, should I say, because that's part two of my chat with Pete. Oh, we had a little natural break there. The theme tune music info is, as always, in the description, and will hopefully be on this podcast. Hopefully we've got the bugs worked out in that one. And as always, go to thecookiecast.com for all of our contact info. Give us a shout, tell us what you're liking, what you're not liking, what you want to see more of, and what you want to see less of. Obviously, if you want to see less of me, then that's probably going to be a bit tricky. So tune into part two very shortly. And until then, bye-bye.